Book of Psalms, chapter 39. Psalm 39, for some verses and a few thoughts this morning. I hope you're taking precautions against the heat. You know, my goodness, every one of you are too important to us to risk not having you with us. So do take those cautions with that heat. Psalm 39, and we'll begin reading with verse 1 just for a moment, please, when David says, he said, here's what I said. So David's having a conversation with David, and here's what David is saying to himself. I will take heed to my ways, and that I sin not with my tongue. I will keep my mouth with the bridle while the wicked is before me. I was dumb with silence. I held my peace even from good, and my sorrow was stirred. My heart was hot within me. While I was musing, the fire burned. Then spake I with my tongue. And all David is saying in that portion of the song is this. I was mulling some things over. There were some things that were weighing upon David's mind that he was thinking about. And he hesitated to speak to others about them. He hesitated even to speak to God. But he decided he would. And so here's what he asked of the Lord that had been troubling him. Lord, he said, verse 4, make me to know mine end. And he didn't just mean how his kingdom would turn out and how things would fare, you know, with his children. Not just that kind of stuff. He said specifically, here's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the measure of my days. How much time do I really have? That I may know, and I want to know that, he said, so I can know this. So that I may know how frail I am. Well, David was pretty much in the prime of his life, and he was a strong king, and we know David's story with Goliath, and we know the greatness of his faith, and we know that he had a heart that was after God's own heart. But he confesses to God in verse 5, behold, thou hast made my days as an handbreadth, and mine age is as nothing before thee. Verily, he said, in my thinking about it, he said, Lord, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. I don't know that I've learned that the way I should right now. When you reflect back upon your best state, for some of us, our best state is back yonder somewhere. We're not who we used to be physically. Hopefully, we're better than what we used to be spiritually, but even at our best state, I mean, even when we're pumping iron and feeling like we've got the world on a string, you know, at best, it's just vanity. It doesn't last. And this verse isn't for our friends and family members who are residing in nursing care facilities now. They know how frail they are. This is for us. Surely every man walketh in a vain show. Is that right? Am I just putting on a show for you or for my family or for God? Surely they are disquieted in vain. He heapeth up riches and knoweth not who shall gather them. Is that me trusting in my money and accumulating more and thinking that that's the purpose of my life? Surely life is more than that. And now, Lord, he asks, what wait I for? My hope is in thee. And we'll stop with that psalm right there. Because it reminds me that I need to ask myself the same question. And maybe you do this morning, I don't know. What am I waiting on? I need to be serious in my search for the purpose of life as God has created it. And I need to be serious about that today. If I am not listening, it is past time for me to listen to God. Oh, he's got some things to say. And this life that he gives us, whether as David will say in another song somewhere, whether it's 70, which is 70 years, or whether it's 80, if by reason of strength, that none of that matters. Just understanding who we are and what we're to be about. And as best our human brains can get it, who God is and what he's about in his work among us. And to quit waiting. to do now what ought to be done now. You remember when Joseph went down to Egypt, he was sold into bondage by his brethren. You recall that, and you remember when finally he was elevated to the position second only to Pharaoh in all the land of Egypt. And as the famine began to unfold, not just in Egypt, but up in where his daddy and his brethren were, he sent for them, and he brought Jacob down, his daddy Jacob down. And after revealing to Jacob who he was, he took Jacob in to meet with Pharaoh. That would be quite a deal for this old shepherd up there in Israel. And when Jacob came before Pharaoh, Pharaoh had a question for him. He said, how old are you, you know? I've got all those other boys. Some of those boys look pretty old themselves. And Jacob's response out of Genesis 47 was interesting. He said, I'm 130 years old. And he said, few and evil have the days of the years of my life been. Now, you've read Jacob's story in the old book before, and you know that, he may have lived quite a few years, but he saw a lot of hard times, a lot of heartbreak, and it wasn't easy. David was having a conversation earlier in his life with Jonathan and his friend Jonathan, if you recall, King Saul's son and David's best buddy. He was having a conversation with Jonathan in 1 Samuel chapter 30, and Jonathan's dad, Saul, was seeking David's life, and David hadn't done a thing in the world wrong. I mean, he slew Goliath, and the people liked him, but Saul became jealous and sought to kill David. And David said, Jonathan was trying to say, Dad, don't do that. I mean, my goodness, your dad loves you. And he said back to Jonathan, he said, you know, surely, Jonathan, you understand there's just a step between me and Dad. But surely we understand as well. What have you filled out for this year's plan? Or do you fill out something long range to try and get stuff down ahead of time and work it out through the year of 2012? Or say, if you do or if you don't, doesn't matter a whole lot. But I tend to do that a lot. But nowhere in my planner have I written down a date for death. Because I don't know, you know, any more than you do. But I need to live with an understanding that even though I am God's child, I have no promise of a specific duration of time to be with my family and with this church and to live in this world. Life, as we have said before, when it is long, is short. I'm saying all this to say this to us all this morning. We just got one shot. This is the only July the 1st, 2012 that you're ever going to have. Once it is done, when midnight's toll rings this evening, it is done. Whatever you could have done and should have done and didn't do, you will have no chance to ever do again. Because this day will be gone and that opportunity will be lost. Now, maybe tomorrow will provide another opportunity, but there's no promises about that. We will, as the old statement goes, never pass this way again. David's son Solomon wrote a whole book about the vanity of life, and you know it to be the book of Ecclesiastes. And in the book of Ecclesiastes, when he came to the last chapter, which is chapter 12 of that book, having expressed in no uncertain language the vanity of life as we tend to live it as mortal beings, he urged us all in Ecclesiastes chapter 12 to get our brains wrapped around the reality of our own frailty. And that we begin right now, whatever right now is for us, at whatever age we are today, young or old, that we remember God. He challenges youth in verse 1 of chapter 12. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, when the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. And he goes on to speak about the process of growing old and of ultimately of dying. And he's talking about sun and light and moon and you know, all that kind of stuff. But he's talking about aging and he's speaking about our eyes go bad. We start losing our teeth. Corn on the cob becomes a challenge. We don't hear, he said, the way we used to be able to hear with the ears that God put on either side of our head, and our hands begin to shake. We don't grip things as well as we used to grip them, and our steps become a little more feeble, and we don't step with the certainty that we had in the days of our youth. And there's a silver cord, he said, verse 6, that'll be loose. There's a gold bowl that's going to be broken. There's a pitcher that will be broken at the fountain, and the wheel of the cistern is going to be broken as well. And he simply means life as we have known it is grinding down to a halt. The dust then returns to the earth, verse 7, as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. He concluded that book by saying those kinds of things. We just have one chance at living in this world. Let's live it God's way. This is the conclusion, he said, of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. It passes quickly. The old house is gone. And it's been gone for some time now. If you look where it sat, you'd have difficulty knowing that there was ever a house there. I mean, it's been scraped clean. The bulldozers come in and all the stuff. The remnants, you know, the old flowers that might have been growing around the old home place and the foundation stones and things, it's just all gone. It's gone. It wasn't ever much of a house to start with. Even when we lived there as a family, it wasn't much of a house. It was four rooms, heated by a coal stove. Later on, when propane came into being, a little propane stove that we had for the four rooms, had no running water. For a period of time there, had no electricity. Wasn't much to look at. No insulation. Who ever heard of insulation back during those days? So none of that kind of stuff. No double pane windows. I mean, single pane. At best, they weren't caulked all the time. I mean, the wind kind of seeped in and around them. And asbestos shingles on the side of the house. That was back when asbestos was thought to be a good thing. But it's gone. The oak trees are gone. The one that sat on the south side of the house and the one that sat on the north side of the house. There, oak trees are gone. The bag swing is gone. The barn is gone. With all the cow milking and hay loading and all the adventures that we had in that barn, it's gone. The tool shed is gone and the chicken house is gone and the smokehouse is gone and the outhouse is gone and it's just gone. The cornfields aren't there. The potato fields aren't there. The watermelon patch, none of that's there anymore. You look around for the barefoot kids that used to walk down the road. Hadn't either to catch the bus or to visit with cousins or and see the dust swirls that were stirred up by their bare feet in the heat of August. Those kids are grown and have grandchildren of their own. And we had no more Friday night sleepovers at Grandmother Morgan's house. We don't hear Granddad Morgan's tenor voice when he sang those nonsense songs that he would sing to us as grandchildren. No more sugar cookies that Grandmother always kept in the cookie jar. None of that. No more hog killings. No more molasses makings. If I want to see those people, if I want to see Wesley and Creasy Bridges, or if I want to see William and Altacate Morgan, if I want to see Hughes and Violet Bridges, you know, I know where they are. I know where the cemetery is located. I can locate the stones. It has their names on them. Names on a stone, snapshots in a photo album, memories of what once was and never will be again, because we only passed this way one time. That's all. And we're reminded over and over in the Scripture that life changes. It doesn't stay the same. And we need to grow in our relationship with God. We need to be about the business of developing a faith that will sustain us through whatever circumstances of life come to confront us, that will cause us to determine and to say with as much conviction as our faith will muster, I'm with you, Lord. Wherever you lead and whatever you have in mind, just lead on. I'm just with you. And to be content with that reality. Jeremiah chapter 8 and verse 20. Jeremiah expressed in behalf of his people, as in his conversations to the Lord regarding the destruction of Jerusalem that was pending and soon to come, and Jeremiah said, the harvest is past and the summer is ended and we are not saved. And I don't know of any more tragic words that could be said by anybody regarding what might lay out ahead, that we have used up all of our opportunities. God worked with Israel with divine long-suffering and called the prophets and sent them among the people, and the prophets were rejected and the message was not received, and until finally the summer, you know, the time for the growing of things, it was over. And they were still lost. Tragedy. Isaiah came to Hezekiah in 2 Kings chapter 20, and Hezekiah was the king of Israel. Hezekiah hadn't been feeling good. You know, sometimes you don't. And you can't really put your finger on it. Just don't feel good. Things aren't right. I know something's wrong. Just don't know for sure what it is. And Hezekiah wasn't feeling well, and Isaiah came to see him and said, the Lord wants me to tell you something. And Hezekiah said, okay. And Isaiah said, the Lord wants you to know this. You need to put your house in order. You're going to die and not live. Wasn't the kind of news Hezekiah was wanting to hear. He turned his face to the wall and he wept. And he prayed and he cried and he sought some kind of relief, and eventually God did give him a few more years. You've not had any old prophet like Isaiah come and knock on your door and say to you, have you thought that you might not live forever? That maybe there's some business you need to be about that you've been ignoring? Have you thought about that? You've not had a prophet come and say to you what Isaiah said to Hezekiah, but you've had other reminders. And you had them last week. We sometimes just rush on by them or pretend they don't exist, but they're there. And hardly a day will pass that there's not a reminder somewhere. Somebody of yours at work, too young to die, died. Accident or disease. You really looked at your kids last week for the first time in a while. They're growing up. Faster than you want, or maybe not fast enough, but they're growing up. You're getting older. You looked in the mirror. I mean, really looked. At the reflection that came back to you, and it's different than it used to be. We have reminders upon the journey of life that this just doesn't last forever. And we need to be doing some getting ready. We only pass this way one time. Let's don't take it too casually. Psalm chapter 89, David was singing another song. In Psalm 89, when he wrote these verses, remember, verse 47, how short my time is. He said, Lord, let me ask you this. Why did you make all men in vain? What man is he that liveth and shall not see death? Shall he deliver his soul from the hand of the grave? And David knew, no, he won't. He won't because he can't. And so death is there. And so he wrote another song, and that song is in song number 90, Psalm number 90. And he said to the Lord, you've been our dwelling place, verse 1, in every generation, before the mountains were. I mean, you're God, and you have been the one to whom we have looked. 1,000 years in your sight are but as yesterday when it is passing as a watch in the night. Verse 4, God sees things from a different perspective than we do. Our days are passed away in wrath. We spend our years as a tale that is told. Verse 9, the days of our years are 80 years, and if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off and we fly away. That's right. So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. Pay attention. God has something to say. And we need to be taught. Desperately need to be taught. And He is willing to share with us from His infinite, wonderful, matchless mind what life is all about. And what it is that we need to commit ourselves to for that life to be good. I mean, we all want that. We want a good life. Thus saith the Lord, Jeremiah 6, verse 16, stand ye in the ways and see and ask for the old paths, where is the good way, and walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls. Yeah, it's not anything new. It's relationship with God. It's faith in God. It's walking by His Word. It's been around for a long time, the answer to the problems and dilemmas that we face in life. But how do we puzzle out the good life, and how do we really find it? And independent of Him. We never do. So, since we only pass this way once, if we are ever going to love the Lord, are you ever going to love Him? If we're ever going to love the Lord, let's do it today. You look down your planner for the rest of the year. Do you have it put on there anywhere? I start today loving the Lord. Well, we tend to overlook that kind of stuff in other activities that are pressing upon our schedule. Today is the day that God has provided for us to love Him. If any man, verse 22 of 1 Corinthians 16, it's critical that we love the Lord. If any man love not the Lord, Jesus Christ, let him be anathema, maranatha. Let him be cut off irrevocably from God. Our Lord cometh is what he's saying. Anathema, maranatha. It's critical that we love the Lord. How do I do that? That's a reasonable question to ask, you know. It's asked all over the Bible because it's always asked from one generation to the next among men. How do we love the Lord? What would it take? We cited the passage last week from Malachi. What does it take? 10,000 rivers of oil? What does it take? Jesus said this in John 14 to help those that were closest to Him. This was the upper room discussion, if you recall, just before, it was the night before Jesus' death. And He was saying teaching some really critical things to the 12 and hoping that they would get a better handle on this stuff than they had before. And He's talking to them about loving Him because they've said, Lord, we love You. He's been saying to them, I'm going away. I'm going to face the cross. And He said to them in verse 15, if you love Me, John 14, if you love Me, keep My commandments. That doesn't need a lot of comment, does it? If we're ever going to love Him, let's love Him today. Lest His disciples didn't understand or it didn't come home clearly to Peter, James, and John and the others, He repeated that after He'd taken about one breath, just six verses further down in verse 21. He said to the same guys, He that hath My commandments and keepeth them, He it is that loveth Me. And unless they still didn't quite get a handle on it, just a few verses further down, He said, verse 23, if a man love Me, he will keep My words, and My Father will love him, and we will come unto him and make our abode with him. He that loveth Me not keepeth not My sayings. So now I know. If I didn't know before, I have the answer to the question, what does it mean to love the Lord? If I say I love the Lord, how is that to be defined? What does that look like if I say to someone else or if I say to the Lord, Lord, I love You? Well, it looks like this. And if it doesn't look like this, it's not loving the Lord. It may be loving something else or being fond of some things. But if I turn away from what He is telling me to do, from the life that He's telling me to live, if I turn away from that because I just want something different, you know, I don't want to be bound by all of that stuff, and it's because I don't love Him. I don't have the right to question Your love. I don't know how you feel emotionally in your heart, but you and I can see what we each do. We live how we live. based on choices that we make. And those choices will reflect to God whether we love Him or whether we don't. If we're ever going to love Him, let's love Him now. If we're ever going to love the Lord, if we're ever going to love the church, what brings you back? You've been here before, most of y'all, I would think. Been here maybe many times. Some of y'all a lot of times. What brings you back? What keeps you coming? Haven't you already heard the gospel? Don't you already know how to live? It's not me. I'm not the attraction, the drawing power. Most of you have seen more of me than probably what you would like to see. That guy not ever going away. Is he going to stay here till he dies, I guess? It's something else that keeps drawing you back. That enables you to, in all honesty, you can say to yourself and you can say to the Lord, I'm glad to be here. As David said, Psalm 122 and verse 1, I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. And you're glad because you love the church. And the choices you make about where to go and what to do, about how to live, reflect the fact that you love the church. If we're ever going to love our neighbor, let's do it today. I mean, the kindness that is needed, the encouraging words that we can speak, the good that can be done, the help that can be rendered. Let's do it today while the opportunity is before us. Let's present our bodies a living sacrifice. That's a challenge, isn't it? Holy and acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And let's determine that we will not be conformed to this world, but that we will be transformed by the renewing of our minds so that we can prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Well, that's enough. I have only reminded you this morning of things that you already know. But I hope to encourage you, those of you that are in pursuit of living life every day as God has taught you to live life, to not give up on that thing. Just continue on. I mean, we don't have to live 3 days at a time. One day's enough. Sufficient unto the day, Jesus said, is the evil or the good thereof. So we thank God for this day that He has given. It's hotter than we'd like. It's drier than we'd like, but we're glad to have it. And the opportunity of being here this morning in one another's company and in fellowship with God. What a blessing this is that has brought us together today. We're going to sing a song of invitation. If you're here this morning and you have not made that decision as God would have you to make it, to love Him, you need to keep His commandments. So when Jesus said, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, he was telling us the truth, and I don't need to walk away from that. So maybe you've not been baptized into Christ this morning, and that time has come, and this is the time that God is providing. Or you may need our prayers as God's child. We certainly stand ready to assist with that. We'll sing the first and last stanza. You come while we stand and sing.